Join your host, Maddie Roche, as she brings you into a community of fee-only financial advisors who are successfully building profitable businesses that serve the next generation of clients. Learn from innovative advisors whose unique stories will inspire you to dream big and take action on your goals. Are you ready to live your best life and help your clients live theirs? Then you're in the right place.
Hello, and welcome to this episode of XYPN Radio. I'm Maddie Roche, your host. I'm excited to have XYPN member Morgan Richard, owner of Origin Wealth Advisors, a fee-only firm out of Austin, Texas, on the show with me today. Morgan joined us on XYPN Radio in episode 178 to share her journey transitioning from being a trader to a firm owner. Today, Morgan's on the show to share what she's been up to over the past few years, specifically how she continues to run a high-revenue business with just 25 clients in 8 to 10 hours a week. That's because Morgan is loving raising her child, and she's expecting her second. Morgan talks about what it's like to delegate some of the major responsibilities of running and executing a firm to one of her trusted teammates. She talks about why she limits the number of clients she takes and how she's incorporated life planning into her firm for more authentic relationships. She also talks to us about how she carved out enough time to recently write a book. Most importantly, however, she gives great advice to any working parent out there who dreams of one day starting their own firm. If you're interested in what it's like to be a parent and a business owner and rock it out with both, then this is the show for you. Avocado toast, selfies, a mountain of student loan debt. Gen Y is anything but traditional, and with over 75 million people, it's a population you don't want to ignore. Learn more about how to serve this unique population in our guide called Attract and Profitably Serve Millennial Clients in Your RIA. Discover 3 key ways to tap into the millennial market and 6 things that they want from their financial advisor. Visit xyplanningnetwork.com/millennials for your free copy. You can find any of the resources we mentioned during the episode at xyplanningnetwork.com/278. Also, be sure to go to xyplanningnetwork.com/VIP. to join our private group just for XYPN Radio listeners. It's the community of advisors we've all been looking for. That's there to provide support when we need it the most. Best of all, it's free. I encourage you to check it out. Again, that's xyplanningnetwork.com/VIP. Without further ado, here's my interview with Morgan. Hello, Morgan. Welcome to XYPN Radio.
Hi, Maddie. Thanks for having me on. I'm excited. Yes.
I'm so excited to have you on. I know you've been on the podcast before. Listeners, go ahead and go back in time to listen to Morgan nearly 2 years ago. But today, Morgan is on the show to chat about an update to her firm, some progress that she's made, and of course, share some personal tidbits of wisdom that she's gathered along these years. Morgan, tell us a little bit about your firm just out of the gate.
Yeah, sure. So Origin Wealth Advisors is my registered investment advisor. It is now over 6 years old, and it's been through really lots of metamorphoses along the way, some of which were discussed on the podcast 2 years ago, some of which are recent because I got my registered life planning designation, actually just finished the mentorship program a few months ago. And after Evoke, going through their 5-day coursework process, completely revamped my how I do everything all over again and how we present this to clients and what I want clients to be thinking about so that like they can really pursue the things that are really, really important to them in their lives. So yeah, again, and I'm sure that Origin's not in its final form. I always, it's funny every time I think like, okay, yeah, I found the thing, like this is how we're going to do it. I learned something new and then it changes again. And the thing I guess that's so nice about running a small business, that's just me as a lead planner. I mean, I do now have a full-time employee in my practice and also a part-time VA, but it is just me still. So I'm still super nimble, able to change things on a dime, able to update contracts or update processes and make these decisions. And I can make them relatively quickly, which I think keeps me competitive, which is nice, and still allows me to charge the fees that I want to charge. So
love it. So much to dive into. Morgan, give the listeners a little bit more info in terms of the number of clients you serve, who you serve, where you're located, things like that.
Yeah. So I have 25 clients. My average fee per client is somewhere around $12,300 a client. So it's a little higher, I think, than the average XY member. My business will gross a little over $300,000 this year. I The median age of my practice is 41. I have a lot of small business owners. I have a combination of small business owners that get paid pretty irregularly and people who get paid on a W-2 that also get paid irregularly because they get large bonuses or something to the sort that makes planning not be something that you can just automate away. And then they're usually also busy families because I think I'm a busy family. And so you tend to attract what you are. So that's added into the mix as well. And then as my business has gone older and evolved, I now deal with a lot of complex trust issues as well.
Wow. Awesome. Morgan, I know that listeners can go back and hear kind of your origin story of origin, but tell me a little bit about what got you into running your own firm. What was your trajectory?
Yeah, so I started as an equity options trader a long, long time ago, 12 years ago, and thought that that was like it for me. I was like, I love trading. This is awesome. It's like adrenaline. And actually, it's like a terrible fit for my personality because I'm like such a nervous wreck. but like inside of like, you know, vomiting. And outside, I'm like, this is cool. I'm awesome. And then like begrudgingly took a job in wealth management in 2010 because I had to. Like the firm I worked for, it was not a good time to be long options volatility. If anyone remembers, it was 2008, the VIX spiked, and it was a great time to be long vol. And then after that, it just slowly declined, and we were bleeding money every single year, and I was the youngest one there. And they were like, you know, hey, like we like you, but you know, we can't really keep you on anymore. So they were really nice about it, actually. They were like, look, like we'll be really supportive, look for new jobs, we'll help you introduce you to people. And it was actually pretty cool. And I did, I met a bunch of other traders, but then eventually, just begrudgingly took this job in wealth management because it just fit everything that I needed. And I had this like moment where I was like, oh, I'm going from like buy side to sell side. Like, what am I doing? And that like actually mattered at the time. Now I'm like, it's stupid. but yeah, so that was, that's kind of how I started. And then I worked at Merrill Lynch for a couple of years. I worked at UBS for about 2.5 years. And while I was at UBS, I got my CFA and I just hit like a wall. It was like, you either become an advisor or you kind of go get a new job. And I didn't really want to be an advisor there. I was pretty keen on the practices of what was going on there. I knew what was going on at Merrill Lynch. I had a feeling, having been at two large firms, that that's kind of just how it is. I didn't need to like test them all before going to starting my own thing. So I happened to go to this like CFA CE thing that I wanted to attend. And there was a guy there who was like, oh, I'm just going to start my own RIA. And I was like, what? Okay. I like went home and like researched it and was like, well, that guy's kind of like an idiot. I can do this. which is like a terrible reason to start a business, but it is the reason why I started. I was like, well, like I'll just get my own clients. Like I'll do this. And I talked to people about how to do it and they were like, all right, well, you either need to be really good at sales or you need to like, you know, generate alpha. And I was like, okay, like what if I do both, you know? So that's how my firm was born. And obviously from there it's evolved to becoming this like life planning, the holistic financial planning practice, but it did basically start as like a fee-only hedge fund style investment management practice.
Love it. And Morgan, you've been someone that over these years has been quite busy. It just sounds that you can tell from your personality that you stay busy. I'm interested in hearing about how did you pivot from kind of having the structure of a job for kind of given to you versus developing your own work style? Has it been challenging? What was that like?
Yeah, it's a great question. I am really, I don't know if type A is the right way to put it. I'm like the split between type A and type B personality. Is there like a type A and a half? Because that's what I would be. So I'm like extremely structured, but like not like you wouldn't, if you met me, you wouldn't think that of me. So it's kind of weird. And so like, it's like the reason why I was able to get my CFA. It was like, I went to work and then I got home and then I had a strict time that I spent after work where I went through the chapters and I had a strict schedule and I had a calendar and I checked off all the days that I did stuff. And I had like these like giant pink check marks that like I would just keep getting, you know, more check marks, and it would just make me feel really good about the fact that I kept studying. And I had other check marks, like green ones for when I worked out, and I had yellow ones for like when I meditated or did yoga. Like I just had like this crazy wall calendar going on. So in some regards, this is like kind of part of my personality, is like if I have a goal, like I just figure out the steps I need to take along the way. I plot it out on a calendar and then I go and do it. So for me, when I started my business, it was like I lost the structure of physically going to work every single day, but I didn't lose the things that kind of make me of like, okay, well, I just need a new kind of calendar on my wall. What kind of calendar are we going to put up this time? And I kind of just like figured out what I had to do and how many people I had to talk to and how often I had to do that and when I could do that based on my schedule. I also had moved back in with my parents to start my business so that I'd have a longer runway. So it was like I was commuting from Rockaway, New York into Manhattan, which is, I mean, anyone who knows, it's like an hour and a half long via public transportation. So it wasn't like I could just pop into Manhattan anytime I wanted and see people. I had to like be really deliberate about how I did all these things. So I think that that's kind of the number one thing is like following your personality and then being really deliberate about how you like make use of that. Because I don't think the way that I did it is the only way you can do it. I just think that like it really worked for me. And once I got the ball rolling, it's like, all right, I'm seeing success. Like, how can I keep seeing success? How do I keep, you know, doing this to make sure that I'm able to keep the calendar I want to have.
Do you have any sort of structure for how you prioritize your day? I'm always interested in how advisors kind of sit down and decide for the day, the week, the month, really what the focus is. As someone who's talking about different colored post-its on a calendar wall, I suspect you have some tips in this space.
Yeah. So, I mean, my calendar now looks very different than when I started out, for sure. I mean, when I started out, I worked as many hours as I had to. And I put as much on my calendar as needed to be there. Now I am the mom of a 2.5-year-old. I have a new child coming in the end of January. So, and I only work 8 to 10 hours a week. So, like prioritization is literally the only way this gets done. The number one priority on my calendar is always making sure that I communicate with my employees. So no matter what, even if I'm on vacation, which I have done, I at least check in for 15 minutes with my full-time employee. My part-time employee, sometimes not, just because if I'm on vacation, we really don't have like paperwork and other things because she's my VA, then we won't check in. But a full-time employee, no matter what, he gets at least a text message being like, hey, like, you know, this is what's going on and, you know, we need to talk for this amount of time. And so that's been really, really helpful of like making sure that at least like we go through the client list and we get all like make sure that all the client needs are met. So obviously that would be the second thing is like client needs come first, right? And the whole reason why I connect with my employees is so that the client needs stuff can get done. So from there, we have a calendar of who needs to be seen, how long it's been since we've seen them. It's a combination of using the CRM and also we just have a spreadsheet because I find it easier just to see all of my clients in one place. I'd love for somebody to sit with me who works at a CRM to like fit some of these things that we have all these like ridiculous spreadsheets that we basically have redundant information for, but like it's really helpful. I just like to see everything in one place. And my brain works better like that. So it's always, okay, how long has it been? When did we talk to them last? What kind of meeting was it? Do they need a different kind of meeting? Do they have a few things outstanding that maybe we need to check in on? Can it just be an email? Does it need to be a phone call? Does it need to be a full on meeting or what? And so that stuff happens and we try to stagger them throughout the year so that I don't see all 25 clients obviously in 1 week because I'm only working 8 to 10 hours a week, right? Not really going to get a long phone call. So there's that. So like we make sure we stagger them so we see like 5 usually a month. And then from there, it's also how much work can I, so like I have to take time to actually prioritize offloading work and then prioritizing what work I'm actually going to do and then scheduling that on my calendar. And then the last thing that always goes on my calendar, my personal needs. So I like to make sure that I get an extra like workouts in. So that goes on there. Time with my family is always on my calendar, all of that stuff. So I don't know if necessarily I would say that they're last, but they definitely fit in there. And there are certain times where I know I'm working and there are other times where I know I'm with a family and things just don't get scheduled when I'm with family.
Totally. Morgan, I have to back you up. I heard you say you work 8 to 10 hours a week.
Yeah.
Can you talk about that a little bit? How is that possible? And how do you make it work? And what's the why behind it?
Yeah. So it's a great question. After my son arrived and I was still like kind of working like crazy and we were on and off with childcare, we couldn't really find something consistent. We didn't want to put him in daycare. It was like, okay, I need to like fix this because this is just not working. I can't work 40 hours a week and be with my son. Like I just can't, or I need to hire somebody or I need something. So at some point, I realized that if I hired somebody in my practice to do a lot of the work that I was doing but needed to maybe let go of, that it necessarily didn't have to be me doing it, that not only could I have a tax deductible expense, but I also would get to spend time with my family who I wanted to spend time with my son. It wasn't like I wanted to spend more time doing, crunching numbers and e-money, right? If I could trade the two, like see my son take his first steps or, spend time entering client information into e-money, obviously I'm going to pick seeing the first, right? So it was pretty easy decision. And then it was just finding somebody to come in. In the first year, my now employee, Mark, he started as a paraplanner. He's now an associate. He worked part-time, probably worked around 20 hours a month. There were some months where it was heavier. Where he was working 25 or 30 hours a month. There were some months that it was less where I took off a bunch of time and we didn't have that much work. And so it just started that way. And then I hired him as a full-time employee starting January of this year. And once I hired him as an employee, I was like, well, he should do a lot more. Because otherwise he's going to be here as an employee doing 20 hours a month, the same thing he was doing. So he started coming to more meetings. He started getting a lot more of the behind the scenes work that I was doing. And I was able to offload basically another 10 hours worth of work so that I was only not working the 20 hours a week, but now working 8 to 10.
Wow. Morgan, you said something really important that you said that the things that Mark started to do were the things that you could do, but you weren't the only one that had to do them. And I think that that's a really hard thing for a lot of advisors to accept, that they can delegate, that there is in fact things on that to-do list that other people can effectively do and sometimes even better than you. What was that like when you were passing that off to Mark in terms of, did you communicate to the clients that was changing, that you were reducing the number of hours, or did anything change on the client end when you hired someone?
No, not a single thing.
Wow.
So I think that's the number one thing that I noticed was Mark does really good work. A lot of times Mark will do work and I'd be like, wow, that's a really interesting way of doing that. I never would have thought to do that. And I check his numbers and they match up with the way that I would have done it and we move on. And then we usually end up implementing, if he comes up with a really cool creative way to do it, we implement his process going forward. Because why would we use my stupid convoluted process, right? And vice versa, right? If he submits work and I'm like, hey, there's something missing here. And there were a couple of times where we've gone back and forth. And the thing I think that's really awesome about our relationship is we're just really open about it. And he has made it really easy for us to have effective communication where I can just say, hey, this isn't right. And this is why. Let's talk about it more. Let's flesh this out a little bit more and then make sure we deliver the right thing to a client. So, and on the other side too, when he's seen that I've made an error, he points it out. He's not shy about that either. So I think that the important thing, if you are going to delegate, is that you have a really good relationship with your employee and that you also, you rise to the occasion. You have to be a leader. You can't just be somebody who expects somebody to come into your organization and just do the things in your organization the way that you want them done without giving them training. They could be literally have 40 years experience and maybe have had their own client, base of their own, but they're still not going to do it the way that you want to do it, even if your business is 1 year old, right? It's just not the way it works. Obviously it's going to be a mismatch there. So it's something I learned. Unfortunately, my virtual assistant learned that the hard way with me because we had worked out a lot of the kinks. By the time Mark was was hired, I was like, oh, I actually have to be a leader, huh? How about that? But there were things, right? I thought it was really important for me to write the client follow-up email because I was like, okay, if I don't write this client follow-up email, it's not going to sound like me. It's not going to have, my stamp on it. And it's just not true. Mark will be in a meeting. In fact, he picks up better notes than I am because I'm just talking to the client. I'm not taking notes. He's taking notes the whole time. So he actually writes a better client recap than I do. So there are certain things where I was like, I can't let go. And then when I did, I was like, oh, I'm pleasantly surprised every single time. So I feel like as long as you are willing to put in the time and training, you can get to a point where you could really offload quite a bit. And at the end of the day, the client just wants to be with you and make sure, if you're overseeing the plan and you're checking all the numbers and you're not just taking that person's work and just throwing it at them and not knowing what the numbers are, which is what they don't want, right? If you're doing all the things where you're absorbing the information, checking it, and then also presenting it, then that's at the end of the day, they want you to just be their liaison to the information.
I loved what you said about, you know, needing to really embrace this leadership role that, that you can't just passively delegate. It's something I get myself into a hard time with. Sometimes I think people really know what's going on in my head and I only say half the things I need to make the assignment, you know, get it out. What have you done in terms of developing that leadership quality in yourself? Is that something that you actively work on learning and researching on how to be a good boss and how to facilitate that relationship?
Yeah, definitely. So I was highly influenced. I don't know when his podcast first came out. It's probably 3 years now. So he's an ex-Navy SEAL, Jocko Willink, and he has a podcast and he has a book. And I read, he was on Tim Ferriss and I heard him and I was like, oh, this guy's like awesome. And I got the book and I read it and I was like blown away by it and didn't really know how to implement it because I also didn't have employees at the time. And then I hired my VA and I didn't really think it applied to her because I was like, well, she's just like part-time VA doing like some paperwork. It's not. But then we were running into issues and I was like, these are my fault. The reason why we're running into issues is she knows what she's doing. She's a very experienced virtual assistant. She's been doing this for years. That's why she runs her own VA practice. Like the stuff that we're running into is because I'm not like doing this properly. And so we sat down and we had a call about how like everything she does is really important and it's really important to me and it's really important to all of our clients. And then she felt really important instead of what I was making her feel before, which was like, your stuff is, you know, whatever, you just do it. Like, here you go. And she's part of the organization now. Like she runs her own VA practice, but she's really like, she has her own email. She has access to CRM. Like I check in with her every week. Like she's part of Origin as much as Mark is, even though she only works like 10 to 15 hours a month. So I think that that's like the number one thing is no matter who's around you, if they're your people, they're your people and you have to treat them with the respect that you would want to be treated with. And you have to like lead and be open enough to receive criticism as well. So when Mark came on board, I was like, look, like I'm really into Jocko. I'm going to send you this book and I want you to hold me to this. And he has. And because he read the book, then he was sort of on board too of like, oh, okay, like we take ownership in this practice and it's okay to admit when you make a mistake. And we're both going to admit when we make mistakes and it'll actually make things happen. So like, it's actually gotten to the point where sometimes we laugh where we're like, no, it's my fault. No, it's my fault. No, I'm sorry. okay. Let's just like do the right thing now, you know? Because like if there's no, like he did it, she did it, you know, there's no finger pointing happening, then yeah, things move forward and we're able to make changes.
I love that so much that you're leading by example also by kind of putting some parameters around your own time and things like that. What kind of culture have you created? It sounds like a really beautiful one, but in terms of, you know, what's the benefit package of Origin for your employees in terms of, does Mark get to work whenever he wants, or is there really a defined schedule for the week that he has to stick to?
Yeah, so Mark pretty much can do the financial planning work whenever he wants. The behind the scenes stuff, he could do whenever he wants it as long as it's done like in a reasonable amount of time. And I usually give him time frames on things. If things don't really have a time frame, then they're just kind of ongoing projects that we continue to check in on. But he has a pretty good idea at this point, like without me even saying how urgent something is, just because we've been working together for so long. That said, if you are hiring somebody, you need to be very, you can't just assume that they're going to know what to deliver the work, right? So you have to be specific about that at the beginning. But once they know, then they know, right? So it's one of those things where like Mark knows now because I was specific. Now I don't have to be as specific because of all the like, micromanaging, really. I mean, there was a lot of micromanaging that went on at the beginning because that's kind of how you have to do it at the beginning and doing it in a way that's respectful, though not that's like, you're an idiot and this is how I would have done it. So yeah, I mean, otherwise though, I mean, there are client calls that happen during the day. He's got to be on those calls. So obviously like if he's going to miss a call, he has to let me know or something like that. He's so flexible with his schedule though. Like honestly, he always makes it. Like he never not makes it. There's even like, he sprained his ankle and he still made it to a call. I was like, you could have just said that you were, I would have given you the day off. Like, he's like, no, I could do it. Don't worry. I'm fine. I'm just like laid up on the couch. Don't worry about it.
Wow. Yeah. Awesome. Well, it sounds like you've made it a really fun environment for him to work in, as well as your VA. Morgan, you mentioned that you had 25 clients, and I'm wondering, is that a goal of yours to stay at that size? 25 sounds so manageable, yet your revenue is so high. I'm wondering, was that intentional, or are you looking to really grow this firm to be another 25 clients?
Yeah, my original goal for my practice was to have a practice that was 50 clients or less, and now it's not. Now, yeah, I'm really happy with where my practice is. I'd be fine. I'd be super happy maybe to take on another 5. I'd probably cap it at 30 just because I like the work life balance that I have. I want to be there for my family. We're very fortunate. We don't need any more money. Like, we manage our personal expenses really well. We're not looking to buy a yacht. I'm not looking to buy a $20 million house on the lake, right? Like, I'm perfectly content to live the lifestyle that I have. And so the amount of money that we're making is just fine. It's time that I'm short on, not money. So, I mean, I feel very blessed and grateful, obviously, that I can even say that. And I worked really hard for the last 6 years to get to the place that I am right now. But I also recognize that, like, it's more meaningful for my family for me to be there than it is for me to add more clients and be there less. So I think maybe when my kids are older and I have a little bit more time and, you know, they don't need me so much, I maybe would think about adding clients, just because, like, right now I feel time constrained because I want to spend time with my family and they still want to spend time with me, right? When we're at the point where they're like, you know, they've got braces and they're, you know, not interested in mom anymore, maybe it'll be time to have 40 clients. I'll let you know. But until then, yeah, this is kind of where I see it staying. I do want to treat my employees better. So having another couple of clients would allow me to give them more money, which I think would be nice, because it's not really for me anymore. So from that perspective, yeah. But I don't know. I mean, I get asked all the time, well, like, what's next for Origin? And it's like the same. Like, I love my clients. They're like my family and I like spending time with them. And I like how things are. Like, do I have to have something next, really?
Well, you did have something next. Yeah. Because you recently wrote a book, Morgan, let me remind you. The Woman Short on Time is also an author. Tell us a little bit about that, Morgan.
Yeah, so I was asked to write a book by a publishing company called Clydebank Media last summer. And it was supposed to be out sooner, all of which is my fault, not Clydebank Media. But super excited to announce that the Personal Finance Quick Start Guide is coming out in October. So it should be out, I think, by the time that this is released. And it's really meant, because I will not ever really have more than 25 to 30 clients, it was meant to be my way of reaching more people. There's always, like, I guess when I hear about what other XY members are doing or other firms are doing, I always have a little bit of FOMO in my heart of like, oh, like, that sounds so cool that you're signing all these clients and you're seeing all these interesting things and you're doing all this stuff and you're working all the time and everything. And then I'm like, but I actually apply that to my life and I'm like, that wouldn't really work, huh? But it would be nice to reach more people. So a lot of the other stuff that I've been doing outside my firm is to reach more people at a price point that's more affordable. Obviously not everybody can come in and pay $12,000 to work with me. But they can maybe pay $30 for a book, right? And the whole point of the book is actually so that they can do it on their own, provided they don't obviously have like super complex financial planning needs. But the point of the book really is so that they can read it, they do some homework, and they create a financial plan for themselves along the way. And maybe they skip a couple of chapters that don't matter to them. Maybe they're not worried about having kids. Maybe they're not worried about, you know, certain things like retirement in the book if they're not looking to retire early and they're a young person buying the book, but that they can sort of work their way through and figure out what's really important to them and how they want to plan for it financially. So I'm really excited that I was asked to do the book. It was a huge time constraint on me. I had to carve out other hours somewhere to do it and do all the writing and do all the editing and do everything else. So that was hard on my family for sure. But now that it's almost here, or will be here when people are listening to this, I just feel really excited and proud of the work that I did. And that at least like all this stuff that's up here, other people will get access to, and hopefully people want to hear it.
Totally. You should be super proud of yourself. I'm interested. How did you get asked to write a book? Cause I have yet to get an email asking me to write a book.
I will email you shortly. No.
Thank you.
But my publishing company has never published anything. So I don't know, Maddie, if I don't do so well. they found me on LinkedIn, which I thought was really interesting. They were looking specifically for somebody who had a podcast, which I had. I started my podcast 2 years ago now. It's called Money Owners Podcast. And I put well, I usually put out content every 2 weeks, but lately it's been more like every 3 to 4 weeks. And the same thing with the podcast, the purpose of the podcast was to disseminate information to people who couldn't pay me in my financial planning practice. It was also a good place for me to organize my thoughts about certain things. Clients would ask topics where I couldn't really stand on a soapbox for 30 minutes and tell them what I really thought about it, but we can sort of like client direct them into doing what it is that they want to do. And so it was a combination of really just being somewhere where I could really focus on financial planning topics that interested me and also provide free information to people who were interested in it, and then hopefully bring them in as a coaching client. My second business is Money Owners, and it's a financial coaching practice. It does not really have it's not like Worden. I don't have like 25 clients that I charge $12,000. It's not like I'm, you know, just like rolling in money here. It's really more like one client every now and then comes through there, and they don't fit Worden's needs. One of the main reasons why I created that practice is because I had unqualified prospects coming through who really don't need financial planning traditionally. They didn't need investment advice. They needed like financial planning beyond investments. And for those people, it doesn't really make sense for me to have them in my financial planning practice because there's a compliance cost to them. And there are procedures that we have to follow specifically for them. Whereas like in Money Owners, I can just talk to them and they do the work on their own. And I don't keep records. Obviously I have like minimal records, but I don't have the kind of record keeping that we have in Worden for the state purposes and everything else. And also really for us, because we have ongoing relationships with these people. So all around it made sense to have that. And so the podcast originally was kind of to draw people into Money Owners, the financial coaching practice, but it's sort of been more of like a pet project really for me because I am so busy and I don't have time to spend, running two businesses. So I think eventually it'll become something. But my book is also through there. It's being released through Money Owners, even though it's through the publishing company. So it won't be part of Worden. So there's some niceness to just having two entities in general. Everything I do at Money Owners is really geared down. Like downstream for a more of a retail client who doesn't have the complex financial planning needs that my clients have.
Wow, incredible. That's a super impressive way to structure access to the services that you offer. I keep going to thinking about how you stay so motivated and what keeps you coming back. And you so clearly love your clients, but I'm wondering, do you have a close group of peers that you really lean on? Are you in a mastermind group of sorts? How do you use a community to keep yourself sane and motivated?
Yeah, it's a great question. So I have a study group of, I have two study-ish groups. One's really more of a more formal financial planning-esque study group. We don't focus on growing businesses or anything. We actually focus more on like planning content. And we meet every 2 to 3 weeks for an hour to an hour and a half. Sometimes we're all busy and we don't meet. And other times we're like, no, like during coronavirus when all of it hit, we were like, every 2 weeks we must meet. What's going on? You know, like talking about bonds and like talking about all this stuff. So the thing I like about that is like, I think honestly, those two guys are smarter than me. And I like hearing what they're working on because it like keeps me on my toes. And we always talk about just like really complicated financial planning scenarios that happen. And we all get them. Like, I think just because of our client bases, we end up with like these weird complex financial planning problems, usually involve tax related stuff. And we just talk about it and it's really nice. And then I also meet one-on-one with an XY member who we talk more, like sometimes we bring up financial planning stuff, but it's usually more like business related stuff. Or specific business processes. She's also going for her RLP. So Katie North is who I meet with. She's been on here a bunch of times. And she's awesome. And we have similar practices and we talk about like all sorts of stuff. And also she's just my friend who I like. So I meet with them. And then I also occasionally, it's like every other month, I talk with the person I went through Evoke with, who was my partner in Evoke. And we just connect and keep each other up on like making sure that we're still have that fire that was lit during Evoke to make sure it's still going and that we're doing the things that we intended to do. So that's been really nice. That's obviously been a little bit shorter term for me. That's only really been since November. So,
yeah. although it's only been since November for you, I will say that this movement towards life planning, I've felt a real pivot to over the past 3 or 4 years at XY. That the first few years, I really never heard of it. And then all of a sudden, we really started hearing advisor after advisor after advisor kind of pivot into this life planning space. And what I know of it is so attractive and wonderful, and it really resonates with consumers. I'm interested, how has it changed your business?
Yeah, so it really motivates people. I think that that's the number one thing. So having been through it myself and understanding exactly what it is that I want to do, I mean, you mentioned this, like, how do you keep staying motivated? It's like, well, like Evoke really helped me with that, actually. It was finding triggers, finding certain things, finding certain even words where when I hear that word, I'm reminded. For me, that's balance. When I think the word balance, I'm like, am I doing this right? Am I working too much? Am I with my family too much? Like, what is going on here? You know? and evaluating it at the end of every day or every week to make sure that I'm actually staying on track. And I do feel like I've achieved that really way more so this year than any other year. I mean, I mostly prior to going to Evoke, I feel like I talked a good talk. And people hear that, like, I feel like people hear the outside stuff that people are talking about, but they don't see the inside stuff. And inside, I really did feel like a chicken running around with my head cut off. Like, I was just like everywhere all the time, so busy, frazzled, saying that I was, you know, with my son and with my business, but also just like feeling like I was just drowning in both. So it wasn't really until this past year that I feel like I've really been able to prioritize and like really focus on really being there when I'm supposed to be there. So I think like as a result of that and then implementing in my practice, like it's really obvious that when you help a client get that word or that trigger or that motivation, that they're going to feel that too. Like there's no way that they don't. So as long as we get it right, they're going to feel it. And the way to get it right is by listening to them, because they have all the answers. We don't have any of the answers as advisors. We don't know anything about what they need. They tell us what they need, and then we help them get what they told us, right? That's the point of financial planning. It's not they come into our office and then we say, okay, well, according to my spreadsheet, you're supposed to do these 12 things and then you're going to be great. Like, I know people do that, obviously, but like that's not actually going to get results. That's going to get them treading water for the next, you know, few years until they decide to fire you, basically. So the way to help them, I obviously believe the Evoke process and I think it really works and that everybody should do it. But if you don't want to go through it, fine, don't go through it, but listen to your client, right? Listen to what they're telling you and take every concern that they have, like, seriously. And I think that we minimize that as financial advisors because we think in our heads, oh, that's not important. Oh, I know that's not important because, like, you know, it's not a big deal. They're going to be fine. They don't want to hear that, though. They came in with something that was really important to them, and then you just kind of brushed it off. So, I think I was doing a little of that before, but now I'm really doing it. Now I'm really feeling like, oh, I'm like, I need to be empathetic all the time. Like, not just when, you know, I want to be, or not just when I think it suits me. Right. And it's not a tool that you use. It's like being a human being and talking to a client and actually listening to them and really listening to them and making them feel really important because you're listening to them, not because you're trying to make them feel important.
Well said. Well said. I love your discussion, and it mimics very much what I've heard from the other folks working through the life planning program, and even from George Kinder himself on the podcast just a couple weeks ago, that a lot of this starts with you. I mean, you have to do the hard work before you show up to your clients. I'm wondering, how did you fit that in, and what was that process like? Because you said it did just start somewhat recently, within the year.
Yeah.
What kind of hard work did you do regarding that?
So I did the 2-day training at XY Live last year, and I literally called my mom afterwards and I was like, I really want to go to this Evoke training. It's 6 days. and George Kinder himself told me I could bring my son, but I think that would not be productive. So how many days could you take? It was like, we were like, before I sign up for this thing and go spend $5,000, like, can you help my husband? Because I think he'll die after 6 days. and not because he's like the most loving, amazing dad in the whole world, but it's just like, he also has a job. You know, he can't just like, you know, take off an entire week and like hang out with my son. So especially it was like a new job at the time. It was like the whole thing. It was not good timing. And my mom was like, don't worry. Like, I got you on Monday. I got you on Wednesday. I can't do Tuesday. I can do part of Thursday. He could sleep over this night. Like, she's like, I got you covered. I'm like, oh, thank God. So, I mean, for people out there who have young kids, obviously, and you don't have family nearby, like, it's so rough. Like, I don't know. We're dealing with it now. Like, we moved to Texas in January from New York. My mom is not here anymore. I was even telling you this morning, I had to go take an emergency trip to the dentist and like, my mom's not here. Like, I would normally call my mom and be like, Mom, I gotta go to the dentist. Can you just come over? And like, by the way, we also were supposed to have a painter come over to like paint the new room for the baby. Can you like, just like tell him what to do instead of me canceling it? So yeah, like that kind of stuff, obviously, like, I'm super missing. But yeah, we made it happen and she helped. And then it was fitting the mentorship in was a little bit more difficult because like they're trying to get groups together. So they just had times that groups had to show up. So it was like, I just got to be on this call at this time. Like, and I would tell my husband and he would just reserve the time, that hour, because like he had to. And then I switched with somebody else to make sure that it was on a day that I was actually working for all my personal calls. Like, they're open to that kind of stuff. Cause I was like, look, in my life plan, I said, I don't work on Mondays. So can you see me on Tuesday? And they were like, sure, no problem. Just find somebody to switch with you. So yeah, they're like, they're nice about that stuff, but there are other things that you kind of just have to show up for. And then a lot of the Evoke work ended up happening at like between the hours of, you know, 10 and midnight, when I would have to do case studies and other things, just because I just can't, like, I didn't have time to do it during the day. So there are ways to do it for sure, but you have to want to do it, right? Like, these are all, like, I took through like specific measures to make sure that this could happen and that I would have my designation.
Wow. Wonderful. I'm really interested, Morgan, in you speaking directly to some of the women listeners here. I do know that, you know, being able to rear children and take on all the responsibility of motherhood and can make some folks not want to get into this space, and that it may think maybe when the kids are older, I'll open up my own firm, things like that. At XYPN, we do have about 22% of our advisors are women, which we're really proud of, but I do know that number can go up. And I'm wondering, from your perspective as a woman in this space and as a mother, how do you advise other folks to get the courage to do this and to try it out and trust that there may be something better on the other end than full-time employment through someone else?
Yeah, I mean, when I started my own firm, part of it was I've always wanted to be a mom. I'm not one of those, like, I know there are women out there and I believe in every woman's right to decide however they want to live their life and their family and everything. But for me, like, ever since I was even, like, I could remember, I wanted to get married and have kids. Like, that's just how it was. My sister and I would play, like, we would enact stuff like that. You know, it wasn't even a question in my mind. So when I was 28, which is when I started my firm, and I had been with my now husband, who was a boyfriend at the time, but we had been together a couple of years, and it just made sense. Like, in my head, I was like, okay, well, like, we'll probably get married by the time I'm 30, and like, we'll probably want to have kids. So like, if I don't start it now, like, when's the time, you know? Like, and in my head, it was like, okay, if I could just get to that 3-year mark, if I could just like get my business running and then I deliver around 3 years, which is actually exactly what I did, which is or pretty close to it. 3.5 years is when my son came, that like, I'll be fine. Because I can get my business running and then I can go for it. And then what I found was at year 3.5, I was like inundated with client work because I had built a practice. And then I didn't have any help. So I think, honestly, I don't think there's any good time to start a business, but I think that there are ways that you can just do things, right? Like, we weren't ready to like get married and have kids at 28 when I started, but like, it would have been fine if we did. And I think the thing that I needed to really internalize and recognize, and that I am now doing for second baby, because, you know, second kid obviously gets the advantages of like the first baby practice run, you know, of like, you know, you just have to prioritize and make it happen. And think about what makes the most sense for your family. And can, you know, if you're married and you're thinking about having kids, like, can you live on one income? What can you do to cut expenses? I did that anyways, right? Like, we weren't even married yet. If I moved in with my parents, like, I'm like 28 years old living with my parents, right? Like, nobody wants to do that. it's a really special time in my life, I have to be honest, but as an adult living there. But yeah, it's like, it's one of those things where you do whatever you can to cut every corner on your personal financials, because like, it's not the business that's going to run you into the ground. And I know that's probably a point that's made on here often, but it really isn't. But I think it needs to be reiterated for moms, because we don't do it because we think we don't have any income coming in, that's going to be an issue. But it's actually, the income might not be the issue. It might just be the expenses on the other side. And what can you do to like sort those things out so that you can still make it happen? And yeah, I think like it's going to be hard though, no matter what. And it is hard. It's still hard for me. It might not sound like it's hard for me, but it's always hard. There's no other way to put this. And I don't mean this insensitively to all of the dads out there who are amazing, my husband included, who really help and take care of their kids. But at the end of the day, there's something about being a mom, and you're like the last stand for your kid. That's just how it is. And I think evolutionary is supposed to be that way. I don't think that there's something wrong with that. I don't think that like my husband's supposed to take that role. Like I am supposed to have that role. And not only am I supposed to have it, but I want to have it. I want to be the last stand for my kids. I want to be the person that's always there. I think that if you're able to organize your financial life, your financial business life in a way that supports you enough and that you have enough support around you to then go and spend the time with your family when you really want to, you can really make it happen. And there are so many ways to do it. Like you can really be a go-getter and try to get as many clients as you can in the first year, if even with a new child, and have childcare around the clock if that's really important to you. Or you can do the way that I did, which is just like, okay, we have a baby now, we're slowing down. We're going to do a little less. We're going to outsource a little bit more. We're going to make a little less this year, and that's okay. And I think just recognizing that that period short term too. Like it was short term when Alex was born. There was a period of time where it was super hard, and now it's actually pretty easy, and we're expecting another one. It's going to be super hard again. You know, that's just how it is. We're going to be sleep deprived, and we're going to need more hours probably from childcare. And you know, hopefully I can fly my mom down here. But yeah, at the end of the day though, it's totally worth it because I make my schedule. I'm always here for my kids. Right. When my son needs me, I'm here. My clients are understanding, they all have kids. Like That's the kind of client base that I've built. So, I think though, if you're family oriented, you're going to end up with a family oriented practice. That's just kind of how it is. If you're not, then you're not, but you're not looking to do this route. Right. So like my son was sick and I told a couple of clients who I was supposed to see that day, I'm sorry, I have to take him to the doctor. He's an ear infection. They're like, okay, great. No problem. We'll reschedule. Like they're super open to that stuff because they've been through it. And I think like including clients in your life and treating them like family actually really helps. If you can have really strong bonds with your clients, they're going to be as understanding and they want you to be as successful as you want them to be successful. None of my clients have ever been like unhappy that we're starting a family or that we're adding to our family. In fact, we've gotten like an outpouring of, you know, congratulations and we're so excited for you. And we can't wait to see new pictures. So I think that's something that women need to recognize. You don't need to be afraid and include your clients in your life. They want to know about you.
Yeah, I love that tip, Morgan. I think that's so important for all of us, whether you're, you know, in this industry or not, or started your RIA or not, that you really, I mean, the clients that you're going to be serving are hiring you for you and your business. So putting a little personality into it can make that relationship that much more authentic. Last question for you, Morgan, and this is kind of along the lines of what we've been talking about, but I know when we think about the percentage of women representation in this industry, that there's this idea of the imposter syndrome, that we have to be overly qualified before we do anything. And we see it in applications and jobs and things like that. Can you speak to kind of what was the strength that kind of got you to believe? I mean, you said you read one article and met someone about it and was like, I can do that. I work on that same kind of wavelength, but I'm wondering, not everyone does. And did you ever stumble with some imposter syndrome as you began to build your firm?
Yeah. So, I mean, not to keep bringing my mom up, but she calls me a maverick because she's like, you're like this like crazy risk taker. Like you just like do stuff. And you know, I think that that's not totally fair. I do actually think through the things that I do. I just make decisions like relatively quickly. I think compared to even, I don't think it's even gender related. I think like if you put me on a spectrum, like I just make them quickly. Yeah, I mean, of course I have imposter syndrome. Of course. Like who doesn't, right? Like men have it too. Women have it. Whatever, you know, gender, race, creed, religion, we all have it, right? I think there's something in our souls that makes us feel like we have to be better than whatever we think we are because we are always our harshest critic and we're never going to be as good as whatever we think we're supposed to be. Other people don't see us that way, I think was like the biggest thing that I had to recognize. It's like, people don't see me that way. People don't see all the little, like hurts and the fear and everything else that's inside of me. So I just put it aside. I know that that's not easy and that people think, oh, you just put it aside. Like, I can't do anything. I can't do that. Like, no, but you can. Like, go do like little stupid things. Like, I used to practice like having a really ridiculous order at a restaurant or Starbucks just so that they would say no to me. Cause it would like feel good to like, okay, a rejection. It's not so bad. Like I'm, you know, I'd be like sweating to death in a Starbucks, like ordering like a ridiculous drink and they'd be like, we can't make that. And I'd be like, okay, fine. I'll just have a non-fat latte. which is like what I wanted anyways, you know? So I think it's just like putting yourself in situations where you can try, not try to fail, but like try it, just see what it feels like. Because at the end of the day, like you're the only one getting in the way of you. I don't actually think that we really have any of these barriers. I really don't believe that. I think that I will have barriers if I think I will, if I have barriers. If I think that there will be a barrier, there will be a barrier. It's kind of, I have no other way of relating this is other than childbirth. If you don't believe that you can give birth to a baby, then yeah, you're going to need intervention after intervention after intervention, right? Because if you don't believe that you can do it, you won't, your body won't relax enough to do it. And all women can do it. We can all do it. It's like one of these things that we're just like naturally born to do. And yet like we have all these interventions and things in our face to like try to get this baby out of us. Like shun all that. What, you don't need that stuff. You don't need any interventions. Like you can just go out there and do it. We all have the ability to do it. And like, who cares what anybody else has to say about it?
Truth. Morgan, you are inspiring. What a wonderful interview. I've so enjoyed getting to know you even more. I think anyone listening to this will have the utmost respect for what you've built and how you've handled it. I think you've given a lot of inspiration for a different direction and the type of different success that can come after chasing your dreams and trying something that you don't totally know what the end result will look like. It's been a total pleasure to work with you over these years, Morgan. Congratulations on baby number two and the book and building a wonderful and incredible business. I've so appreciated this.
Thank you, Maddie. I had a really good time being on and this was fantastic.
Avocado toast, selfies, a mountain of student loan debt. Gen Y is anything but traditional. And with over 75 million people, it's a population you don't want to ignore. Learn more about how to serve this unique population in our guide called Attract and Profitably Serve Millennial Clients in Your RIA. Discover three key ways to tap into the millennial market and six things that they want from their financial advisor. Visit xyplanningnetwork.com/millennials for your free copy. Be sure to join our VIP community at xyplanningnetwork.com/VIP to hang out with other XYPN radio listeners, ask questions for future mailbag episodes, and finally, to find a community of like-minded financial advisors. Thank you so much for joining me today. We'll see you next time.
You are not alone and you are not crazy. It's scary starting, building, and growing your own financial planning firm. And that's why we put together a free private community just for you, the Cutting Edge Financial Planner. Go to xyplanningnetwork.com/VIP or text XYPN Radio to 33344 and join a network of thousands ready to change the lives of Gen X and Gen Y clients.